Sports Radio 100.3 The Team is socially networked. Facebook.com/1003 The Team. Follow us on Twitter at 100.3 The Team. And now on Instagram at 100.3 The Team.
Danger Zone makes me think of Draymond Green. Good morning. Welcome back to The Drive with your new host, Mr. Pat Payne, right here on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Good Tuesday morning.
Good Tuesday morning, and as always, joined by Wally B and our producer, Remy D'Angelo. And Remy, you got about 2 weeks before you have to go back to high school, right?
I do.
Oh, man. I'm not envious of that.
What school is that?
Not either. Myrtle Beach High School.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Remy's 17 years old, 18 years old. Which one?
17. Geez, going into my senior year.
Oh, Lord.
Big year. Awesome.
Big year.
Making me feel
old. You play sports?
No, I don't. I did like a lot of like the announcing for sports and stuff. Excellent. All the behind the scenes work.
You're like the Wally B of Myrtle Beach High School. That's what I did in high school. I was a marginal athlete, but I wanted to talk my butt off.
That makes me feel so old, Remy. You're 17 years old. You know what else makes me feel old? On our sister station, Sunny 103.1, hearing
some of that music
within the new
music. But being
music.
On with me, the old radio dog, you should feel quite young because I'm the grandpa in this show now and on this station. So, and I'm honored.
Speaking of the new music on that, and the reason I brought this up is because Wally B is on Sunny 103.1,
the Grandstand's greatest hits
at the nighttime hours. I come in the station, and that's usually the loudest station in the building, just because it's got the open. Pretty much the open air, and it's right in the middle of the hallway, right. So it projects down the hallway. And I'm listening, and I'm like, that's Hootie and the Blowfish. That makes me feel so old. That's like one of the first albums I ever bought was Cracked Rearview Mirror.
Great, one of the greatest albums ever. Actually, for Atlantic Records, it is the highest selling debut album for any artist on their roster. And Atlantic has got some very iconic bands and solo artists on their rosters. Let's put it this way. Hootie, Darius, and the guys, they set themselves up for life when they put that album out.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't know what happened, but the residuals they get on that album, they're set.
What a great album, though.
Yes,
that kind of is a good segue, being that Hootie and the Blowfish did come from the University of South Carolina. So we're going to go ahead and preview a little bit of the Gamecocks, talk about the best-case scenario, worst-case scenario, also talk about five things we don't know heading into South Carolina football camp. We do have some sound from one of the potential starting quarterbacks, Perry Orth, and, of course, some sound from Will Muschamp, the head coach himself. But I first want to talk about this little story that came out over the weekend. This was from July 29th. That was Saturday. Steve Spurrier named the ambassador and consultant for the Florida Gators. This is two things came to mind. This is a kick in the face.
Sort of. I thought so, too.
He had such a relationship with this South Carolina. I know he started. You know, he was the starting quarterback for the Gators in 1964 to 66, won the Heisman Trophy in 1966, was a coach, obviously, for Gator Nation. But he's now being associated more with, in this state at least, South Carolina, obviously, because of all he did as the coach.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's moved on into more of a type of ambassador role with South Carolina. Well, that is no more. Steve Spurrier is now returning to his alma mater and the site of his greatest success as head football coach, joining the University of Florida's athletic department as an ambassador and consultant for the Gators. So the second thing I thought about was, this is Jim McElwain's second year as head coach for the Florida Gators. Is Steve Spurrier going to try and put his imprint on the Gators? Is McElwain going to go to Steve Spurrier to ask him for help recruiting?
Well, one thing I've learned over the years is that consultants in pretty much any profession, they usually take the credit and place the blame.
Exactly. Well, that's what they can do, right?
That's what they do. They take the credit and place the blame. You know, well, this is what's wrong. And then, of course, you know, when they're right, and a lot of times they're not, that's what they do. They take the credit and place the blame. So look out, McElwain. Will Spurrier end up being back in if McElwain doesn't do what they want?
I don't think that they'll ever bring him back as a head coach, but I could see maybe in the future, if Steve Spurrier is open to it, having more of a larger role instead of just ambassador and consultant in the athletic department, maybe being not athletic director, but somewhere around that position.
Like, Steve, you made enough money. You don't need any more. Go into retirement. Go fishing.
He's one of those guys that can't stay out of it, though.
That's true.
You know, football is life for him, and
yeah.
especially being able to share this with his family. Him and his wife Jerry are extremely thrilled to be moving back to a place where they had so much success, and so.
And they met there 50 years ago.
Yeah,
it's a nice little love story.
There we go.
Warm and fuzzy part of it all.
But that's got to be a kick in the face to a lot of South Carolina fans out there, especially thinking that Steve Spurrier would have an impact on South Carolina and help Will Muschamp in the transition. It's just got to be something that really kind of gives a bad taste in the mouth for South Carolina football fans. But we are heading into South Carolina and every other college football training camp. And so there was an interesting article on the state, and it's going over the five things we don't know heading into South Carolina football camp. The first question that this writer had, and I think it's a great question, is, in general, how is this all going to look? We have no idea what Will Muschamp-led South Carolina Gamecocks team is going to look like. We don't know what the roster will look like. There's a lot of pieces that obviously left for the NFL. Some transferred out. There's going to be a lot of freshmen integrated into the lineup. And so I think it's going to be very interesting to see what type of team this is going to be. And we'll go ahead and listen to Will Muschamp's first clip talking about having a good summer at today's meetings.
Felt like we had a pretty good summer. I mean, we'll see. Jeff Dillman and staff do an outstanding job, and the guys seem to be in pretty good shape and real good spirits. We started about 15 minutes early with our team meeting today. Coach Finks was not there, so we started without him. And then Chance Miller, our compliance guy, he wasn't there either. So our team started early. They were early. Our administrators, they weren't there on time.
They weren't there on time.
Not a good precedent.
No, and it's going to be very interesting, and we've seen Will Muschamp obviously lead the Florida Gators kind of down a little bit of a wrong path and then go to Auburn and be the defensive coordinator and see the struggles with there. So a lot of people were questioning this hire with Will Muschamp.
Happened so fast.
It did happen. Well, they also, I felt like they waited, and this is something that we've talked about in the past, where they waited longer than any other team because Steve Spurrier did go ahead and pretty much step aside.
Yeah.
And so they waited. They had a chance to go ahead and lock up some of these great names that did switch schools, but they went the other route and waited and really picked their time to go ahead and take Will Muschamp. We're going to go ahead and talk one more time about the youth on the team, and this is head coach Will Muschamp.
Got a lot of youth and inexperience on this team, as I've been said in multiple situations before, especially on offense. But the work ethic and the mind of our guys have been really pleased with and how they've responded to the staff and responded to the things that we're trying to do. We're really pleased with that.
I mean, what can you really say? Are you going to be displeased?
Well, when you're a player, you're a coach, you have a new leader, everything becomes new, and you basically have to reprove yourself. So you've got to buy into the new attitude, the new philosophy, and let the past go and move forward. So, Marcus Lattimore yesterday said that he was excited about the new attitude, and he's seeing it. He's feeling the energy, the synergy that they're developing. So hopefully that will, come together and make a difference at some point in time for the Gamecocks this year.
Well, the biggest difference we're probably going to see is on defense, because that is Will Muschamp's bread and butter. They played the last couple of years in South Carolina trying to prevent the big plays and make opponents work down the field. But that really did not work. And so we're going to see a totally new Muschamp defense. They usually play hard, hit hard, if nothing else. But it's going to be very interesting. The biggest question for the South Carolina Gamecocks is who will be under center taking the snaps. There's some great names. Perry Orth has obviously had the experience, and he has somewhat of the offense already in his mind, being that he started a couple games last year. But I think Brandon McElwain has really the ability to come in and prove himself to be one of the best quarterbacks in this little group. Jake Bentley is also a name. He has a little bit more ground to cover because he is coming from high school. But let's go ahead and hear from Perry Orth, one of the prospective starting quarterbacks, talking about what he's seen from some of his teammates and what that gives him actually hope for this upcoming season.
The new discipline that we have that Coach Muschamp, Coach Dillman's installed over the off season, I think that everything's been more attention to detail, a lot more strict on some things, but we're just overall excited. There's a new enthusiasm I think that we were missing last year, and we're really excited to go into this camp.
And let's go ahead and get his thoughts on the actual quarterback competition itself.
Oh, excited as always. Every single year I've been here, I've been in a competition with somebody, so it's nothing new. Brandon and Jake and Lorenzo, everybody that's going to be playing quarterback, they're all talented, as you guys all well know, and we're excited about it.
I totally forgot about Lorenzo Nunez, just the incredible athlete that he is. There was some speculation that he would be splitting time between a type of wildcat quarterback and then moving out to the outside to play wide receiver because he is such a dynamic athlete.
Interesting, interesting. Now, iron sharpens iron. Competition makes you better, so hopefully it's going to work out that way with all the players in the quarterback's position for the Gamecocks. We'll see. I like the fact that there's a quarterback with a Hispanic last name. That's so rare. You know, being I'm a mutt. You know, I'm Puerto Rican, French, Italian, African American. So I'm a mutt. So I just love seeing things break the norm and, you know, hearing a Hispanic name or even like the local guy who talked about the Carolina Forest running back, you know, diverse.
Simmons,
I
yeah.
love hearing unique things like that. It makes it more interesting.
And you know, you are correct. I believe quarterback competition has its positives. It pushes you to the limit of your abilities, makes you maybe succeed in places that you necessarily wouldn't.
Right.
But it also can be a hindrance because these guys are now with the first team, you know, not having an actual number one quarterback. You know, they'll be splitting time in this offseason during these camps, taking snaps together.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to take away a little bit of the time that, you know, maybe one quarterback can go ahead and get into. When we come back, we will go ahead and get into some of the best case and worst case scenarios for the South Carolina Gamecocks and go to Twitter because I saw that we did have a tweet. But right now, let's go ahead and get to our next commercial break, starting off with the sports update, followed by the news and weather.
Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Can you dig it, sucker?
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team, with your new host, Mr. Pat Payone.
Pardon me, Clemson fans. We're going to continue to talk about South Carolina right now. You like what I did there?
Yeah.
That song's called Pardon Me.
Like that tie-in.
So let's wrap up our little South Carolina talking about the best case and worst case scenarios. And real quick, just the best case scenarios is that this offense is going to be built around the running game. I mean, they have an amazing running back in David Williams who he averaged 50 to 75 yards per game last year. And I think he's going to be able to make a step up. But you really can't depend on these quarterbacks. I don't believe that's the offense that South Carolina needs to have. It needs to be a kind of grind the clock, stabilize the offense with the running game. And you also have to hope that the freshmen coming in just pop off the page and really earn their college scholarships. Defensively, you got to think Will Muschamp is going to come out with some wrinkles in the defensive scheme, and so this front seven is going to be able to go ahead and supply some pressure to opposing quarterbacks and hopefully stop the run. So that those are the best case scenarios. In terms of record wise, I think it's a great season if they make a bowl game, so 6 wins. Worst case scenario is they don't win a game and they get demolished by Clemson, because that's really the most important thing for South Carolina fans pretty much in the entire state.
Yeah, I don't think that may be the better case scenario. As I've learned with the Gamecocks, is that you want to always hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
So let's go to Twitter, Remy, real quick. Susan wrote in. Read us her worst and best case scenario.
All right, Susan wrote in at 100.3. The Team. Worst, go winless for the season. Best, make a bowl game. Dream, beat Clemson.
Yeah, that's not happening. I'll go ahead and say that, Susan. I apologize, but that beating Clemson.
That's why it's a dream.
It's not going to happen this year. But that's going to go. And, you know, we're going to continue to talk about SEC teams, and definitely we'll break down some Clemson. But I do want to get into something that's, you know, affecting us in the Myrtle Beach market. And I'm gonna throw this to Wally B, because, you know, this is something that as soon as I start hearing things about this, that just turns me off from going to the beach. And so last year we had the sharks. This year, what do we have?
We have the jellyfish. That's right. So many jellyfish are showing up. A swarm of jellyfish bobbing in the surf has prompted warnings, as this past weekend the National Weather Service stepped in and said, look, you know, Due to the certain swells and the warming of the water, they are drifting inland, and we've got two different kinds of jellyfish that are showing up.
Great.
There's the classic bright one. There's the more dim brownish one, and the people aren't seeing the brown ones, and they're getting stung. I had family in town this week in Virginia, and my nephew-in-law, he's an in-law, not outlaw. I like him. So if you like your in-laws, they're in-laws. If you don't, they're outlaws. But my nephew-in-law got stung three times. And there's been reports of multiple tourists being stung 3 to 4 to 5 times. Well, you know, if you get stung once, shame on the fish. If you get stung twice, maybe shame on you. But we got to be aware of the jellyfish. It's become a big problem, along with some of the areas that have a high bacteria going on. So you really got to be aware and check with your lifeguard. I mean, if you have family or friends coming into town, they're going to the beach, make sure they check with the lifeguard. And, of course, first thing people say is, how do you treat a jellyfish sting?
There's a couple ways.
Yeah. Lifeguards are all equipped with a certain vinegar spray that's supposed to quell the sting. And if you don't, then you have to go with human vinegar.
Oh.
And that, is, of course, urine. You actually have to urinate on the sting. And, you know, of course, you don't want to do it in public. You want to hide somewhere. Go into the find a porta potty somewhere. Go to the beach access and go in there. But you don't want to be doing it in public because you can be arrested for a decent exposure.
And Dustin writes into us real quick. Just a heads up, jellyfish always show up in late July and August. We're not saying it's a rarity, but this has got to hurt a little bit of the tourism and little people going to the beach.
No, they always show up, but not this magnitude. Yeah, I've been here for 20 years, and I've never heard the hype on the jellyfish that I'm hearing this summer. So
especially when these writers use words like swarm. That's not, you know, a couple, you know, maybe, you know, scattered. We're talking about taking over the water.
Yes. Be aware. Be careful. You know, you may want to bring some vinegar spray with you, or maybe a bottle of your a bottle of your own urine in reserve, just in case.
I hope we catch a break here. But when we come back after the short little break, we're going to go ahead and get into some fantasy football. Yeah, I heard you guys wanted to talk about that, so we'll talk about it and introduce our fantasy football league. We're going to come back here on The Drive with our Hour 2.